Welcome to Upswing Poker Level Up, the show that will help you improve your skills and make more money in less than 30 minutes. My name is Mike Brady, and I'm joined by cash game pro and coach Gary Blackwood.
What's up, guys, and welcome to this week's episode. We're going to cover a different topic every week, and today we're going to cover check raising.
That's right. Today we're talking about check raising. A player raises preflop, you call from the big blind, the flop comes three cards, as it usually does, you check and face a bet from your opponent. We're going to talk about what hands to make this play with, how often to make it, and go over the critical factors to consider, such as your opponent's bet sizing, the flop texture, and the opposing player's tendencies. So I think the first thing that you have to cover when talking about check raising is your opponent's bet size. So I'm going to kick it over to you, Gary. How does your opponent's bet size impact your check raising strategy?
Yeah, very much so. You'll find that the composition of your raising range is very similar regardless of the bet size you face. But when you face a smaller c-bet, you raise much more often. And when you face a larger c-bet, you want to raise less frequently. A bit of an exaggerated example is if you look at button versus big blind in a single raise pot on 10-10 deuce rainbow, you'll see the solver check raises around 28% of the time versus a small c-bet. But versus a larger c-bet, it check raises the same range, but it only check raises about 18% of the time, which is a very healthy difference.
Can you define small and large c-bet size just to make sure everyone's on the same page?
Sure. So traditionally, a small c-bet will be somewhere between 25 and 33%. And you'll see a larger c-bet be something between 70% and 100%.
Right. So then those 50% or so pot size bets are kind of somewhere in the middle, neither large nor small, right?
Yeah, sort of a middling size, I would say.
Makes sense. So that's really interesting that you're pretty much raising the same hands overall. You're just raising with them less frequently against those bigger sizes.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Okay, let's talk about flop texture considerations next. In other words, the three specific cards that come on the flop and how they impact which hands you should check raise and how frequently you should do it. Gary, what types of flops are you going to be check raising relatively frequently, and what types of flops are you rarely or maybe even never check raising?
So there's very few flops that we're rarely check raising, but we want to be raising more frequently on the flops that are better for our range as opposed to our opponent's range. For example, if we call a three bet and the flop comes down ace, king, seven, we aren't going to be raising that type of flop very often. But if we call a three bet and the flop comes down king, six, five, where we connect more frequently with the six and the five, that's a flop we'll find much more raises on. The flop will almost always be better for the preflop aggressor. So instead of asking yourself, is this a good flop for my range? A better way of thinking about it is this a good flop for my opponent, or is it one of the not so good ones for them?
Right, because as the person who is aggressive preflop, they're pretty much always going to have the superior range, but there are certain boards where as the preflop caller, you sort of catch up a decent amount, particularly in that sort of top end of the range, right? Like sometimes you'll have more sets or more two pairs or more straights, stuff like that. So those are the boards that you really want to be trying to rifle in those high frequency check raises. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are the types of boards that we want to be check raising at a very high frequency. But as you know, you sort of mentioned in terms of us never check raising, there are certain boards that are really good for your opponent, like the ace, king, sevens and the, you know, the king, queen, fours, etc. And you'll find a lot less check raises on those compared to a board like, 10, 7, 4, which is very middling and very connected.
Talking about specifically calling from the big blind, facing a c-bet, deciding to check raise, what are some boards that you're really going to be going quite hard versus a c-bet and check raising often?
So paired boards, the solver plays very aggressively. We've already talked about the 10-10 deuce. You know, that's a board that you should be check raising 28% of the time on average. But other boards that are really middling and connected that you've got lots of natural bluffs on, as we've already mentioned, one of the main factors that determines how often you want to raise is your opponent's c-bet size. Because a board like King 8-3, we don't have too many natural check raise bluffs on, but we'll find plenty of check raises from the big blind versus the button on that type of board. You've just got to be a little more creative with the types of bluffs that you find, which we'll cover in just a few seconds.
All right, so yeah, let's get into hand selection. So let's start with those higher frequency check raise flops like you just talked about. What types of specific hands are you including in your check raising range on those boards that are high frequency check raises?
So one of the biggest leaks that I want to talk about straight out the bat is that people have this fear of losing their customer if they raise some of their nutted hands. And this is a huge problem, particularly in single raise pots, because the pot is very small. And if you've got a set or a top two pair, you really want to start building the pot as soon as possible. Your opponent will, of course, fold to your raise sometimes, but for the times that they continue and you end up winning a much larger pot on the turn or the river, it's much higher EV to make that raise on the flop. And you want to balance your strong hands with some of your stronger draws, like nut flush draws and second nut flush draws, open-ended straight draws, your higher equity bluffs.
Right, but you're not going to be check-raising those draws every time, right? Because if you always check-raised your quote-unquote natural bluffs, which is those open-enders, those gut shots, those flush draws, then when you do just check-call and the turn completes a draw, you're never going to have that turn strong hand, right? So how do you decide and how do you kind of recommend people deciding, you know, how frequently and when to raise with one of those natural bluffs, one of those draws?
So one of the main things that will determine how much we're check raising overall, before we talk about, you know, our bluffs and our natural draws, et cetera, is what we call your global frequency. So if it's a board you're supposed to raise really often on, then you do then tend to raise your open-ended straight draws, your nut flush draws, et cetera, extremely often. However, if it's a board that your range doesn't want to check raise on overall all that much, then you tend to rarely raise those sort of draws, as we've mentioned. In terms of prioritizing your draws, you tend to favor, say, for example, the board is 9-7 deuce, you'll tend to favor a hand like 10-8 as opposed to 8-6, because that overcard gives you a little extra equity. And when it comes to choosing your flush draws that you want to check raise, obviously you want to be raising your nut flush draws and your second nut flush draws as much as possible. But the solver does this lovely thing whereby, say, for example, you defend the big blind versus under the gun and the flop comes down 9-7 deuce with two spades, you're much more likely to raise a hand like ace-3 of spades as opposed to ace-jack of spades. And the reason for that is that when you've got ace-3 of spades, your 3 of spades doesn't block a lot of the flush draws that your opponent can hold, whereas when you've got ace-jack of spades, you're blocking hands like king-jack of spades, queen-jack of spades. So you tend to favor your nut flush draws and your second nut flush draws with the lower kicker and your open-ended straight draws with a backdoor flush draw or with an overcard to the board wherever possible.
Yeah, and that's a super crucial point that Gary just made. When you have an ace-high flush draw yourself, you want your opponent to have a lower flush draw. That's kind of the dream scenario for you. So when you have ace-3 of spades, that allows your opponent to more frequently have a flush draw of his own, like queen-jack of spades or king-jack of spades, and then you're in that situation where you're going to be able to check raise and get them to call with a worse hand. They're calling with queen high or king high when you have ace high. And you're also building the pot in case the spade or the flush card comes. And then you stack them because you're in a flush over flush cooler scenario. So yeah, now let's get into some specific boards. Let's talk about two relatively high frequency check raise flops. These are two boards that when you're in the big blind and you've called a raise and you're facing a c-bet, you should be raising relatively often compared to all boards in poker. So let's do Jack 6-4 with two spades and King 8-3 rainbow. Starting with Jack 6-4 with two spades, Gary, how are you approaching check raising on this board? What specific hands are you using?
So let's talk about our value. First of all, as mentioned, it's a pretty big leak. Say, for example, you face a c-bet and you're holding pocket sixes or, you know, pocket fours, top two pair, that type of hand. It's really understandable to want to sort of just flat call and allow your opponent to continue to bluff. But it's really important that we start building a pot with our nutted hands. That's something we have to do. You know, our value range is very easy to work out. We've got, you know, pocket fours, pocket sixes. We've got jack six. We've got a bunch of two pair combos. The solver does this lovely thing where it loves to raise top two pair and it loves to raise bottom two pair, but it likes to balance its range a little bit with top and bottom pair. So jack six and 6-4, very high frequency raises, and jack four suited is going to be a much higher frequency call, although it does raise that sometimes. Onto our bluffs, as we've just mentioned, you know, our nut flush draws and our second nut flush draws with the highest kickers, we tend to call those much more liberally. And a hand like queen deuce of spades or king three of spades, these are the types of hands that we want to be raising very often. We've also got a bunch of open-ended straight draws, hands like 7-5, 5-3. And we've got plenty of gut shots as well. Given our global frequency here is around 15%, we want to find the 8-5 suited combos, you know, with the flush draw or the backdoor flush draw, and all of our open-ended straight draws as well. In terms of our bluffs, we do also like to raise some of our second and third pairs. And this is really important. On a board like Jack 6-4, we're very rarely going to raise a hand like Ace-4, but a hand like 4-deuce or 4-3 is much more likely to raise. And the reason for that is that our low kicker unblocks the hands that we're trying to deny equity from. For example, we would never raise King-4 because we're trying to deny equity from a hand like King-10. Whereas when we've got 4-3, the 3 doesn't really block any of those two overcard type hands.
Right, because when you're check raising with those bottom and middle pair type hands, you're hoping your opponent has some overcards that they're going to fold. So when you have one of those overcards yourself, you make it a little bit less likely that they have those hands. For example, when you have king 4 on jack 6 4, it's less likely your opponent has king queen, king 10, those types of hands that are c-betting as a bluff and will fold to your raise. It's much better to have that 4-3, which doesn't really have any interaction with those high card hands in your opponent's range, save for maybe like an ace 3 suited or something like that. All right, now let's move on to king 8 3 rainbow. Gary, can you go over how you'd approach check raising on that board? What types of hands you check raise for value, and then you can talk about some of those unnatural bluffs that you check raise on that board.
Yeah, absolutely. And as Mike has just mentioned, we've got lots of unnatural bluffs here because our global frequency, i.e. how much our range wants to raise overall, is around 16% here. And on a board like Jack 6-4, it's so easy to find the 7-5 suited, the, you know, the Queen 5 suited, etc. But on King 8-3, we have no natural bluffs. And what I mean by that is a bluff that's got a gut shot, an open-ended straight draw, a flush draw. These are what we call natural bluffs. And on a board like King 8-3 Rainbow, we have no natural bluffs, so we have to get very creative. Once again, we'll start with our value, and we always want to be raising our pocket threes, our pocket eights, King 8 suited. King 3 suited, going to be raising a decent amount, but it likes to call sometimes. And we can also raise our King Queens and King Jacks and King 10s on this type of board. And one of the reasons for that is because our global frequency is so high. If our range was only raising 6 or 7% of the time here, we wouldn't find the King Queens or the King Jacks or the King 10s.
Right, because on King 8-3, there aren't so many value hands to choose from, right? Like, you might have pocket 8s, although you might actually re-raise those pre-flop. You definitely have pocket 3s. Sure, you have King 3 suited, you have King 8, but that's about it, right? There's really not that many hands that you can have on a King 8-3 board that are really strong value. So relatively strong value hands become King Queen, King Jack, King 10. So you end up including those hands in your raising range at some frequency as well. So yeah, now let's move on to specific unnatural bluffs. What types of hands would you be quote-unquote bluffing on King 8-3 as a check raise?
So one of the main things we're looking for is backdoor equity. So on a board like King 8-3, a hand like 9-7 suited is peak raising in terms of one of our bluffs, because we're looking for a hand that can turn a straight draw, that can turn a flush draw. And if we have a hand that can turn both, the solver loves to raise these types of hands because the solver wants to continue to bluff on the turn when it picks up equity. So say, for example, King 8-3 with one diamond, we check raise our 9-7 of diamonds. We can continue to barrel on a jack, a 10, a 6, a 5, or a diamond. So we're looking for that backdoor equity, hands like 9-7, 10-7, 7-5. We can even raise these three card straight, three card flushes centered around the three as well, because we've got hands like 4-2 suited, 5-4 suited, all those types of hands that we love to raise. And again, the solver loves to raise these 4-3 suited, 3-2 suited, 5-3 suited type hands where we have bottom pair, we want to deny equity. And we don't block any of the hands that we're trying to deny equity from. Case in point, if we've got 5-3 suited here, a hand like Jack 10 offsuit is going to c-bet here, and it'll never call versus a raise, but it has about 30% equity here versus our bottom pair. So we love to raise our bottom pair, deny that equity from a hand like Jack 10, and take down the pot, as opposed to allowing our opponent to just see a free turn card and get their 30% of the time.
Right, you basically rob them of 30% of the pot by getting them to fold that, which is a huge win. And there's one other thing that's kind of fun about check raising those bottom pairs. One of my favorite feelings in poker, personally, is when you check raise one of those bottom pairs, you get called, kind of indicating your opponent has top pair or an over pair or something like that. And then you bang off the trips, or you bang off the two pair on the turn, super disguised strong hand that you're now going to be able to barrel off on the turn, barrel off on the river for value, and maybe even win a stack from a hand like pocket aces. It's basically a five out bluff, similar to how, you know, you have four outs when you have a gut shot straight draw, when you have bottom pair. It's kind of like you have five outs to make a quite strong hand as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's, you know, something we've spoken about already in terms of board coverage. If you're only raising, you know, 9-7 suited on King 8-3, when the three rolls off on the turn, you have to just shut down. You can't continue. So you need hands that connect with the three. You've got a little bit of 8-6 and 8-5 and hands like that in there as well. But as you say, Mike, it's a very disguised two pair or three of a kind, and it could allow you to win a very large pot because your opponent's just not going to believe you all that often when the three rolls off on the turn.
What are some rather unintuitive hands that some people may think you should check raise, but actually make more sense as a check call?
So there are some scenarios where we have really, really strong hands and we don't always check raise them. We've spoken about on King 8-3, we should basically always be check raising a hand like pocket threes. But say, for example, we defend the big blind and the flop comes down 6-5-4. There are some hands in there that people will be check raising way too much that are actually very vulnerable. A hand like pocket fours or 6-5 suited, you might think you just always check raise these hands, but given the board can change so much on the turn and you could be losing to so many combos already, on those really wet, really connected boards, we actually play some check calls with some of our nutted hands, and we'll even throw in the odd check call with a hand like 8-7 suited, because once again, we kind of need to balance our range a little bit on that type of board. So I see a lot of people raising way too much with a hand like pocket fours on 6-5-4, when in reality, we want to call that hand much more often than not.
Yeah, and that makes sense, because I'm sure people who are listening to this have found themselves in the scenario where they check raise one of those vulnerable hands on a board like that, let's say 6-5 on 6-5-4. They get called, and the turn is something really nasty, like an 8 that completes a flush. So now there's 4 cards to a straight and a possible flush. Or maybe the board pairs the 4, so now your 2 pairs kind of counterfeited, 6-5-4-4, and you lose to stuff like aces. Kind of brutal to have bloated the pot out of position when so many cards can come on the turn that make your hand shrivel up and no longer become super nutted like it was on the flop. But all right, now let's move on to low frequency boards. And I don't think we need to cover these quite as much because we've covered the higher frequency boards and how to check raise on those quite a bit. But can you talk about some specific boards that you should have a relatively low check raise frequency, why you should have a relatively low check raise frequency on those boards, and then get into the specific hand selection? What types of hands would you check raise when you are doing so?
Absolutely, and they're really quite few and far between, but there are certain types of boards that we want to have little to no check raising range on whatsoever. It should feel really intuitive to us in terms of boards that are really good for our opponent. So if we defend the big blind and the flop comes down ace, king, seven with a flush draw, coupled in with the fact that our opponent uses a large c-bet here, our check raising range is really, really quite narrow. So the types of boards that we don't want to check raise very often on are the boards that are just so nutted for our opponent. There are not too many of them, but boards like ace, queen, seven, flush draw, ace, king, eight, flush draw, those types of boards coupled in with the large c-bet, those are the types of boards that we don't want to raise very often on at all. And one of the great things about a board like that is that they're just so easy to play in terms of working out what our raising range looks like. So because we're not raising that often, it's really easy to work out what our raising range is, given how small it is. So on a board like ace, king, seven, flush draw, given our raising range is so narrow, it's really easy to work out what it is. We've got our value, our pocket sevens, a little bit of ace seven, and we've got our natural bluffs, our queen deuce, queen three, with the flush draw as well.
Maybe mix in a hand like queen 10, jack 10 with a backdoor flush draw as well. So you have that gutter and then also a backdoor flush draw, something like that, perhaps as a natural bluff on ace, king, seven.
You can definitely have those, but they'll be very low frequency. Given our global frequency is so low, they'll be in there a little bit. But if you want to keep your strategy nice and simple, you're completely fine to just raise a hand like queen deuce with a flush draw and pocket sevens and keep it as simple as that.
Simple tends to be better when it comes to poker strategy. All right, what about the inverse of an earlier question I asked you? Are there any hands that like to check raise that people listening may think are clear check calls?
Yeah, you can raise a little more liberally with your top pairs, but only really versus late position. So if you defend the big blind versus the button and the flop comes down king 6-3, as we've already suggested, you can raise a hand like king, queen, king, jack, king 10. But I want to make it really clear, you can't do that versus MP or under the gun. You're just not allowed to raise that liberally with your top pairs because of how narrow your opponent's range becomes. But versus a button open where your opponent's got a hand like king 8 offsuit that obviously under the gun doesn't have, your king 10 now becomes very strong. On the flip side, we also want to raise some of our second and third pairs in the spot with the weakest kickers. So people will think that king jack off and 6-4 suited are clear check calls on a board like king 6-3, but we actually raise both these hands sometimes. 6-4 suited is more of an equity denial thing than anything else, protecting against hands like jack 8 suited that will just never call a check raise on this board. But if we just check call, they've got 30% equity, and we allow them to realize that equity very often.
All right, let's move on to raise sizing. How do you approach your raise sizing in general? How does the flop texture and your opponent's bet size play a role in how you choose your sizing?
The main thing to consider is my opponent's bet size. So I tend to only really raise to 3.2 or 4.5x the c-bet size, depending on the scenario. If my opponent ever bets 50% or bigger, I'll just use that 3.2x. And if my opponent bets smaller, I'll mainly use 4.5x. But there are certain boards like paired boards or single raise Broadway boards, big blind versus button, that we tend to use the smaller raise size on. The only time I'll raise 4.5x versus a small c-bet is when we're not raising very often with our range. For example, button opens, we call out the big blind and the board is double Broadway, or the board is ace high. Our range is a little more polarized and our sizing scheme must reflect that.
Makes sense, because when you do have a polarized range, in other words, a range that really only contains top-end really good hands and low-end bluffs, you want to be raising to a large size. So when you are raising a board with a polarized range, you're going to be doing it for a big size. I also like what you said there about, you know, facing your opponent's bet size. When you're up against small bet sizes, you need to raise bigger because you need to make their pot odds worse, right? If you raise small, they're going to be getting incredibly good pot odds to call after they bet small. But if they bet decently big themselves already, you really don't have to raise that big to make their pot odds, you know, a challenging number for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's one last thing I want to touch upon in terms of, you know, the difference in our raising range and the size that we choose as a result. We've already spoken about a board like King 8-3 Rainbow. Big blind versus button, we get to raise a hand like King Queen or King Jack, which means that if our opponent bets one third, we should be raising to around about 3.2x. But we're not raising those King Queens and King Jacks versus MP or under the gun, which means that our range is much more polarized. And as a result, versus a one third bet, we should be raising to around 4.5x. So that's a really cool example of the difference in our raising range and how our sizing scheme reflects that. We're much more polarized versus an MP C bet. We're not raising King Queen. We're not raising King Jack. And therefore we use the larger size, but versus a button C bet where we are raising the King Queen and the King Jack, we use a smaller raise size.
Yeah, that makes sense, because you have, you know, you're raising less overall valuable hands, so it makes sense to use a smaller size with that. And that point you made about facing the earlier positions and middle positions is a very important one. You're up against a very condensed, strong range, generally speaking, assuming your opponent is playing reasonably. When they've raised from under the gun, they've raised from middle position, they have a lot of strong hands, not that many weak hands. So when it comes King 8-3, you know, they just don't really have that many weak hands. They have a lot of the top end of the deck, and you can't be raising thin for value against the top end of the deck in general. We'll wrap things up by talking about opponent tendencies. I'll leave the floor to you on that.
The only real tendency I want to talk about is the fact that people tend to c-bet way too wide on certain types of boards that they shouldn't, perhaps even without realizing. And I can give you two great examples of that. Small blind versus big blind on King 7-6 flush draw. The small blind is only supposed to c-bet here like 40% of the time. And button versus big blind on A6 deuce rainbow. The button is only supposed to c-bet here around about 65% of the time. People tend to over c-bet in spots they shouldn't. So it's really important that we find these check raises with our open-ended straight draws, are nut flush draws with the weakest kickers. We want to punish these over c-betters. And if we're playing too passively and calling too much, then we're only allowing our opponents to realize their equity on future straights or check back the turn and see a free river. So let's be sure we're playing as aggressively in these spots where people don't realize that they can't be c-betting as often as they are. And one last thing I want to say, and I think this is really important, is that if you look at some sims, you'll be really surprised to see how often our opponents are supposed to float after we do check raise, but humans won't float anywhere near as much as the solver does versus check raises. So when we're approaching how to continue on the turn, I'd strongly recommend prioritizing your higher equity turn barrels as opposed to your lower equity turn barrels, because your opponent's range is going to be stronger than it should. And we can't just be blasting into a strong range. We want to have turned that straight draw. We want to have turned that flush draw. We want to have that equity as opposed to just blasting into a range that's really, really strong.
Yeah, that's all really good stuff. I just want to add one quick thing on playing versus those over c-betters. So like you said, certain boards like that A6-2 rainbow, button versus big blind, people tend to just c-bet maybe even their whole range or very, very frequently on that board, when in reality, they're only supposed to c-bet about 65% of the time, like you said. And the reason they're only supposed to c-bet 65% of the time is because they're supposed to be facing, if they bet, a decently aggressive check raising strategy. But if you don't check raise aggressively, you're actually playing into their hands. You're accidentally allowing yourself to be exploited because they're c-betting too often, but you're not doing anything about it. You're just calling, you're folding sometimes, they're getting to see the turn almost every time. It's really good for them. On the flip side, if you start check raising a bunch and they aren't floating all those really surprising floats, and I want to ask you in a moment, what are some of those surprising hands that the solver calls versus a check raise that humans never call? If they're folding all of those hands versus your check raise, you're now turning the tables and exploiting them. So yeah, really quick, one last question for you. On A6-2 rainbow, for example, Someone c-bets, you check raise. What types of hands does the solver like to float versus that check raise? And for those who don't know, float is when you call a raise or a bet with a hand that's kind of nothing, usually with plans to take it away on a future street. What types of hands does the solver like to float on an ace-6-2 rainbow board versus a check raise?
There are some really weird and wonderful hands that are supposed to be floated on these types of boards. So if we look at a board like ace-6, deuce, rainbow, 9-8 suited with a backdoor flush draw, if our opponent c-bets that and then we raise, our opponent is supposed to pure float that hand. And that's even considering we've used a large raise size. So your opponent is supposed to float with hands like 3-card straight, 3-card flushes, even if they are 9 high on an ace high board. And the vast majority of humans don't find these floats. So if we're check raising much more liberally, we're making our opponent fold even more than they should, because people will not float anywhere near as much as they should.
Yeah, and then on top of that, they're c-betting too often. So at the end of the day, this check raise is just absolutely printing money. But the point you brought up earlier is key, and I don't want it to get lost. Once your check raise gets called, their range is going to be surprisingly strong, and you have to proceed with caution. So when you check raise on these boards, the turn comes, whatever card, kind of doesn't matter. Be careful, because your opponent probably has a good hand. Otherwise, they wouldn't have called the check raise. They're just not usually going to be finding those unintuitive floats with hands like 9-8 suited. So now you know how to make more money with your check raising strategy. If you enjoyed this episode of Upswing Poker Level Up, be sure to subscribe to get notified about future ones. And if you have any suggestions for future topics, tweet them out with the hashtag UPLevelUp.
That's all from us for this week, guys and girls. Really hope you've enjoyed the episode. Thanks very much. We'll see you next time.